Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Andrew Bowser.
And I'm Sapphire Sandalo.
And welcome to Alter Weekly. Coming up on the show, we talk with Pierre Sigaritis and Dina Silva about their female-led slasher short, I Who Have No One.
Then we talk with David and Nick from Paranormal Solutions, Inc. about their background in comedy and just how skeptical of the supernatural they really are.
But first, Sapphire, how was your week? How are you doing today?
My week was all right.
Okay.
So today I actually went on a hike at Franklin Canyon. Have you been there?
I don't know if I have been to Franklin Canyon. I'd imagine, but I can't say for sure.
It's one of my favorite spots in LA just because it's always less crowded than or Runyon. So if you need like a nice little hike that you will not run into anyone. Like
yes.
It was a Sunday and the trail was empty.
Love it.
There was families, but they were all spread out. So that
love
was nice
it.
For that. But what was wild was that on the drive there. Okay, let me back up a little bit. So on Thursday, I visited my grandma and I was with my cousin. And I've mentioned the owls thing on this podcast before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like, I just see owls all the time now. And I was with my cousin and then I saw this owl statue in a parking lot. And I was like, holy crap. And I took a photo of it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm starting to see them again. And then today, when me and my husband were driving to the park, I saw this exact same owl statue on top of my neighbor's house. And I was like, oh my God, has that always been there? Like, why have I never noticed that before? And I texted my cousins and I told them about it. And then we're driving down Melrose Avenue and I see more of them. And
whoa.
It was the exact same one. So I'm freaking out and then my husband's like, what, why are you freaking out? And I'm like, you wouldn't understand.
Have you not brought up the owl thing to him before?
I honestly can't remember. he is not a believer,
right.
That's what makes this story so embarrassing for me. So we're driving along and like we're driving so fast, so I can't take a picture of all the owls I'm seeing. And then we stop at a stoplight and I turn to my right and it's a Dunkin' Donuts and there's a freaking owl on the top of the roof.
Oh my God. A real owl. Oh,
a fake one. And I was like, oh my God. And so I pull out my phone and I take a photo of it because we're finally stopped. And he's like, what are you taking a photo of? And I was like, it's the owls. They're everywhere. And he was like, oh yeah, they put that on top of buildings to scare birds. And I was like, oh my God. this whole time I was texting my cousins being like, they're following me and they're like, what if you discovered some underground society or something, like you should follow where they
oh my
leave.
Gosh,
I was going so deep and then in one sentence my husband just
leveled it
all of it. But and then I was like so deflated and I was like, oh. But then so here's the thing though, even though now I know, I might know why they exist on all of these buildings.
Yeah.
I truly never noticed them before.
Right.
And that's kind of the whole point of synchronicities and stuff, awareness. It's like, yes, all of these things were here. Nothing has changed. The only thing that has changed is my awareness of them. So the way I see it is like, why am I noticing them now?
Yes. Yeah. I
Everyone
honestly
crazy.
I didn't know that about the owls though either.
Right?
Yeah.
You're gonna start seeing them now around LA.
I will. I'm sure I will. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, Sapphire was right. The Owl Society. It's like some kind of Illuminati conspiracy.
Owl Illuminati.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry.
Newsflash.
That's right. It's time for your newsflash. Jamie Lee Curtis is in talks to join Eli Roth's Borderlands film. She is nearing a deal to play Dr. Patricia TANIS Collider reports. Eli Roth said, working with the iconic Jamie Lee Curtis has been a lifelong dream of mine. I am so excited for her to bring her humor, warmth, and brilliance to the role of TANIS. Watchmen writer Stacey Osei-Kufour is writing the new Blade movie for Marvel. Hollywood Reporter says, Marvel has spent the last 6 months meeting with writers in what was described as a meticulous search with which Mahershala Ali was directly involved. Only black writers were seriously considered, a reflection of Marvel's focus on diversity and making representation a key factor. Mira Sorvino and Courtney Cox are going to stars with a horror comedy pilot entitled Shining Veil. It's about a dysfunctional family that moves from the city to a small town into a house in which terrible atrocities have taken place, but no one seems to notice except for Pat, played by Courtney Cox. Pat's convinced she's either depressed or possessed. Turns out the symptoms are exactly the same. Everyone has their demons, but are Pat's real? Or is this the portrait of a typical family torn apart by mental illness? Mira Sorvino will play Rosemary, who is either Pat's alter ego, a split personality, her id, her muse, or a demon trying to possess her. And that's it. That's your newsflash.
Newsflash.
Filmmakers and friends Pierre and Dina have made a female-led homage to Maniac with their slasher short I Who Have No One. We talked to them about their love for horror and the message behind their madness. Pierre and Dina, thank you so much for joining us. We're excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, thank you for inviting us. We're super excited to talk about our film, really.
Yes, we are.
Well, first of all, just tell us about how this short came to be.
It all started with Dina asked me to do like a little reel for acting. And from that, we did like a comedy thing. And eventually we were like, we wanted to make kind of like slasher, obviously, because we both love slasher films. So I guess we wanted to make a slasher that people would want to see. And Dina was such an amazing actor that she wanted, so that we quickly figure out like, okay, you're gonna be the bad guy. Basically, we're gonna make a movie where you're the bad guy.
When me and Pierre met under crazy circumstances, just randomly at a get together in LA, and but now we've been good friends for 3.5 years. And so when we were there, I was like, dude, if I want to kind of be in it, and he's like, yeah, of course. And I was like, cool. And I was like, can we, you know, like, let's make her weird and deep. And he was like, well, let's make it about like, what, you know, what do you go through? And I was like, well, being a big girl in the world of Hollywood and acting, so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when you're in those rooms and you see all those chicks and you're like, damn, you look great, Stacey. Like, congratulations on the glutes, man.
It's
like,
always a Stacey too. It's always a
Stacey. It's always a Stacey. And so he was like, let's write about that.
And we wanted to make something like really 80s, really 90s, like the stuff that we grew up on, you know, like the Jason and the Scream and the, you know, all those masked serial killers. Really what I had in mind when we started doing that is to have like kind of like a female version of Maniac. And yeah, we wanted to create a character that is struggling with how society tells women to be pretty, a certain way of pretty, of being like, this is how you need to be happy and successful. And what happens if you don't fulfill those requirements that the society forces you to do. And that leads to a struggle that eventually leads to violence.
And acting out of sorts, you could say.
Yeah,
You mentioned Maniac. What about before I Who Have No One? What's in your horror DNA? What did you watch with your father that you bonded over? And Pierre, what did you watch growing up?
Well, I really started out with serial killers and slashers. The first thing I watched was obviously probably Halloween and Scream. I was obsessed with Scream. And so quickly then I was drawn into anything that had like a mask and a knife. So yeah, you name it, everybody knows who these, you know, boogeymen are. And eventually I expanded my interest into like anything in horror, really. So yeah, now I love everything, really.
Well, Dina, what about you? What were those movies that you bonded with your father over?
Straight trash, actually. Yeah,
my dad's
was like, we didn't. My dad's Mexican, from Mexico, so my mom hated horror, all about the love story. And so after she would go to bed, I'd wake up and go into the living room, And it was like, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Lake Placid, Anaconda. I mean, like,
these just are all amazing movies.
Yeah. Sapphire's favorites.
They are amazing. Like, they're my favorites for sure. Like Firestarter, fucking The Blob, all these things. But never, so being Latino, you know, Catholic, and never demon movies. Never anything about ghosts. Because once you watch it, Mika, they come in. Mika, you let a door open.
And this comes up on this podcast so much.
I know.
Dude, straight up, like, Latino fathers, they don't fuck with that shit. And us, dude, my dad's like, you're not playing around with Ouija's, right? And I was like, no, Dad, dude, it's film sets. We're not. He's like, okay, don't make them do it, you know? Yeah, so it was just always those. And my dad's also a scared person. And so my dad would always be like, are the doors locked? Like, after we watched the movie, go, you don't tell your mom. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And of course, I'd be up the rest of the night just being like, holy fuck.
Has he seen your short?
Yes. And so he likes that. He has a thing, because it's the machismo of the Latins. He goes, Mika, well, like, what about, you know, guys are going to see that? And what about if they think you're crazy? Like, they, you know, because you're not. And I'm like, Dad, that has nothing to do with it. And he's like, yeah. I know, but I'm, you know, but no, he loves it. As long as there's no demons, man.
Yeah.
The dude is all for it. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask about the gore in the film. There's a lot of really great moments and a lot of convincing moments, which I know is harder to do than doing it cheap and easy. What was that like on set? You made quite a mess.
We did. We did. Well, first, I want to say we had Keio Miyamoto, who's like our go-to makeup, special makeup artist. She's great. So she, you know, has to take a lot of credit for that question. And we have also my a French friend who does VFX, who actually put some VFX blood in the movie that I will not tell you where it is. But so he did like fake blades in VFX. So we wanted to make it super practical, obviously, but there's still VFX that's like hidden here and there. And I think he blended the two things together. Now, Dina and I, we also did our own gore that we had prepared before the movie. So then when our makeup artist showed up, she had a lot of stuff to work with, because we obviously we wanted to make a horror film for horror fans, so we had to know, and it was about like stabbing and stuff, so we needed to kind of be on the ball. But we were adamant, right, Dina, when we shot any scene we did, we would never wrap before we could lock the gore.
One of our favorite phrases is, there's got to be something in there.
There's got to be something in there, but we got to
make sure. But it was always said, you didn't say it before. It was always at the end. Just be like, not to be like, I think we got it. It was always like, there's got to be something in there.
Yeah.
But that was always at 3:30 in the morning.
But you know we put blood in. My camera was covered with blood. The lens was covered with blood.
Yeah.
We created so much blood. Keio had her nice blood. We had the blood from
she had
more
like a giant pump with blood in a.
Yeah.
It was
she had like brushes with blood. The goal to get the perfect blood work in splatter or whatever in the shots really pushed the performance in a way, and everybody on the crew, because we were so obsessed and irritated. And
I love blood on my face. Can I just say that? I love it. I love the feeling.
I wanted to ask that. I it felt like watching your performance that you were not inhibited. It felt like a very liberating performance. Did you find it to be?
I think making horror films is some of the most amazing art in the world. For the fact of everything, there's so much art that's made either by the props, the prosthetics, the blood that goes into it. And as a character, especially if you're the villain, it's like instant satisfaction, if that makes sense. Yeah. Having that blood on your face is like when you finish your painting, you know, or you finish sewing something or paint. I don't know. It's just like this, not saying that I'm a serial killer, but you know what I mean? It was just like this point of, I loved it. And there's the end scene after I kill Ian with the dumbbells of when like I spit out the blood and I just like, and that was after like so many takes and just being like, I fucking love it. It was so much fun. Yeah.
Well, It's time for a segment we like to call Crazy Cues. This is a string of random questions that we find to be very revealing about the guests, if they have answers for these questions. So let's start off with crazy cue number one. Have either of you found yourself in a kind of real world horror scenario?
So I will say I have two things to say real quick. One is, yes, I have been in a position that was really freaky. Actually multiple times, but one was quite freaky. So the only thing I can tease you is that, yes, I did have something with a Ouija board.
And it
that
had to
was
do with
quite
a Ouija
freaky.
Board. Yeah.
It had to do with a Ouija board. It had to do with someone who was not really into it or was not believing in it and not respectful. I was the host of the Ouija seance, so I was like kind of like trying to entertain everybody. And I was surprised to see how people actually reacted to it and how entertaining it was. But then eventually it turned into one of our friends really not feeling well and doing something weird. So
wow. I will respect I will it. Say, it's yeah. it's staying at that, but I know Sapphire wants to know more.
I'm dying to know.
But that's okay.
Now I was just gonna add to this. Otherwise, I have some really, really terrifying sleep paralysis that I don't know if you could would say it's a horror, you know, related
for sure.
like, situation. But I kind of have like the full package of sleep paralysis, which means I can hear, I can feel, I can see.
Do you ever experience seeing a shadow person or any
yes,
kind of?
I see a man. I see a man and he's naked and he's all like kind of like dark, like a black skin, but like coal, like a charcoal.
Wow.
And bald, always bald, and with like long nails. One
wow.
time it was a woman, but 90% of the time it's a man. And it doesn't want to reveal itself too much, but sometimes I can see, never see the face, but I see the hands, I see the crooked hands.
Interesting.
I feel the breathing and I hear the voice and it speaks to me in French. So it's a
wow.
French man. It's a French man. Yeah, it's very vivid and sometimes he can even hurt me, but then it the pain lasts for a second. And then I realize it's like towards the end of like whatever happens. I don't know how long it lasts, but it's very, very violent. I get like bullied sometimes at night.
Yeah.
You should film yourself sleeping.
I know.
That's how it is with Sapphire and I talk about, I have nightmares frequently and I have to, when I come out of them, I have to stay awake for a minute or two. And
oh yeah.
Even
otherwise
maybe get on
right
my
back.
Phone. Yeah. I maybe get and just do a lap around the house even before I lay back down. Cause if I fall back asleep, it'll just be right back to, hey,
yeah.
just like, yeah,
yeah. yeah. And usually the second time is worse for me.
Yeah.
It's like, so yeah.
So do either of you have any super spicy hot takes about horror?
Okay, well, so I have two hot takes. The first hot take is I believe that Black Christmas is better than Halloween.
Dude, oh. this was my hot take a couple weeks ago. Remember, Sapphire?
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just so much better. I think it was not advertised correctly. I think maybe the fact that he doesn't have a mask, that Billy doesn't have a mask, didn't really work at the time. Mm-hmm. I will just expand real quick on how much better it is. It's better because I think it aged better, even though it might look a little. I watched Halloween again and I think it's like kind of, it's more like cheesy. The acting is not nearly as good. Black Christmas is so much more relevant to now. She's mm-hmm. pregnant. She has the main character has so much going on.
Yeah.
And then there's this freaky killer in the house. The killer is terrifying. I'm sorry. It's way more terrifying than any Michael Myers. Michael Myers is silent. When he takes his mask off, you can see he's like some blonde surfer looking guy, like whatever. Billy, you do not want to know who Billy is. You do not want to have anything to do with this guy who's stuck in the attic. I think the camera work is much better on, and I will say that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
You know, it's so effective. The killer scene where Margot Kidder gets killed while the other one are like the kids are singing like Christmas carols and there's like those beautiful shots.
And it's intercutting.
Like it's like more provocative than anything that you watch now that's putting out there. It's like Yeah. So yeah. So Billy is over Michael Myers anytime. And I will just finish with this. I don't know if it's true, but I heard that John Carpenter was obsessed with Black Christmas. He was obsessed and he wanted to do something almost as good. And so he talked to Bob Clark and was like, you did a masterpiece. And Bob Clark was like, yeah, thank you. And Carpenter said, you should do the sequel because Billy doesn't die. What happens to Billy? And he said, well, if I were to do a sequel, but I won't, he said, if I were to do a sequel, it would be that he was, Billy was put into a mental hospital and he escapes on Halloween night.
Oh man, I've never heard that. If that's true, whoa.
Yeah.
That is some tea for a horror podcast. That is some good
tea.
I'm wearing my Halloween hat, but nice. I also agree. I really think Black Christmas is more effective in many, many ways.
What are your guys' thoughts on the remake then?
Well,
we did a whole podcast.
We did a whole episode.
Did you? Because I need to watch it.
You need to watch the podcast, not the movie.
Yeah, no.
Watch only the podcast.
We did a whole episode.
The movie, sadly.
Yeah, we did a whole episode comparing the three Black Christmases, and none of us on the show were excited by the most recent remake. Dina, what is your hot take on the horror genre? You've got a hot take?
I got a hot take. I'm not a fan of torture porn. Even though I made a film where I brutally murder people, I don't get why we're connecting buttholes to mouths. My kind of torture porn, which I dig, I think has a little bit more, how would you say it, like smarts, would be like Misery. You know, that's a torture porn, but it's, you know, it's a little bit more classy. I don't know. She doesn't reveal on the first date kind of thing. I'm just not a torture porn person. I love blood and guts and suffering as much as the next guy. But sitting through 2 hours of Stacy getting, you know, her eyeball chopped off and like white goo coming out. And,
yeah,
that's hostile.
I don't want to name any names. So like, whatever. It's fine. But everybody knows what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right.
It's just like some of the things, like the first hostel, like for sure being, I unfortunately never had funds to travel as much as I would have wanted to, except to like Mexico to go see like my tia and abuelita. But like, you know what I mean? Like if I were to go to Europe, you know, it did scare me. I was like, fuck, I'm going to get murdered. They're going to take me. No, it's great. But then like, I just think of some of the other ones, just like Human Centipede, it's kind of a cool idea for sure. But just, that's just not my thing, you know? And a lot of people go like, how can you really like horror to kind of appreciate the gore?
I don't know. That's too hot of a take. I feel like most people would agree.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I think there's a difference.
I do like torture porn.
Sapphire's the most inclined, I think, to like torture porn.
I'm not
porn.
Obsessed with it, but like I see the value.
Yeah,
you see the value. I get that. that was just my hot take. Because sometimes in conversation, like we're just not that into it. Like, but that's what horror is. More gore. I'm like, yeah, but you can do gore, you know, in such a
meaning. I like it when there's like some, like I actually do feel like there was like some type of message with Hostel.
Okay. Like there is a message, but like Terrifier. Okay. We got Terrifier, for instance. I had a blast. When she got sawed through the hoo-ha, I was like, damn! I gold star for fucking originality, man.
But Terrifier has more of a kind of like a self-aware dimension to it, where it's like, it's kind of like over the top visually boogeyman crazy, where Hostel or other torture porn could be more kind of like, oh, this is reality and we want to make you like kind of like so much like a warrior and see like those people suffer for so long that it, you know, Terrify wouldn't make the same effect. I feel like Terrify is like kind of like a cartoon with crazy blood everywhere. It's like, ah, you know, it's
And he's so great. He's such a great baddie, such a great villain.
Boogeyman.
Well, let's wrap it up with this. If either of you could exist within a horror film, not have starred in the horror film as an actor, but be a character in an existing horror film, what world in what film would you want to live in?
I'm the funny person usually, so I'm gonna die about the second person in. So if I'm gonna have a great time in something. I think like one of my favorite 80s horror films is The Blob.
Yeah.
1988, man. I think the kills in that are.
That movie rips. That's a. Yeah.
Kiss. Dude, it is so underrated.
It really is. I rewatch that often.
Yes, and you should. I rewatched it with my uncle and my brother, and we were laughing and just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Some of the just, it's touche.
So you wouldn't mind going out that way? You wouldn't mind going out encased in the blob?
You know, just encased in the blob. You know, one of my ex-boyfriends being like, is that Dina rolling down?
That's great.
Fuck it.
That's great. Well, Pierre, what about you?
Oh, I'm going to sound so much more like a douchebag, like an egocentric person. But if I were to be, if I were to be in a horror film, I would not want to go like by the blob, like Dina. I would like to be kind of like a vampire and interviewing with a vampire,
yeah,
or Coppola's Dracula, you know, like this kind of like classy, cool looking, immortal vampire that can still be terrifying but like flirty and immortal and
those are really, those are great answers because they're on such separate ends of the spectrum. Live forever, like, and just be like a hot guy forever. Dina wants to die inside of a blob. That's great.
After this year,
yeah,
fuck it, let's go. I'm good.
Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you both for joining us. This has been a great, great conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You can check out Pierre and Dina's short I Who Have No One when it hits Alter February 15th.
David Milshard and Nick Carella are a few of the minds behind the supernatural comedy Paranormal Solutions, Inc. Here, we talk about their favorite episodes from the show and what cryptids they'd like to see in a second season. Well, thank you both for joining us on our show. We're really excited to have a chat with you. We love talking about paranormal stuff, so we're really excited for this.
Us too. We're just excited that people want to talk to us at all. So this
about anything.
Yeah, right. About anything. You know, we could talk about paranormal stuff. We could talk about the show if you want. But like, you know, I have other interests.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Paranormal Solutions, Inc. and how it came to be, how it came to fruition.
Well, Nick, I'll hop in real quick. I'm David. One of the creators, Paranormal Solutions, Inc. It came from a little idea I had a long time ago called Ghost Pals. And I started talking with Nick about it. And then it was like a forest fire of positivity. It became this bigger idea where why be just contained to hunting ghosts or getting rid of ghosts? Why not believe in everything and make a profit? And that was that's how the idea started 6-7 years ago.
Mm. Oof, long time.
Well, do you each have an interest in horror or the paranormal or supernatural outside of this series? Is that what led you to the subject matter, or were you coming at the subject matter as a skeptic or as an outsider?
What's funny is that you know, I'm super intimidated by answering that question only because I don't want to come off as like a poser. But
no, it's okay.
I'm super like afraid of like violence and like paranormal. Like I would say that like I on the surface I'm a skeptic, but really I think truly I'm a believer. Like I get freaked out real easy. David, on the other hand, is very much like this character and is like a true skeptic. And finds like horror fairly hilarious.
Yeah, so I see the profit margins in it. Like, Everybody likes horror. Everybody likes sci-fi. I love comedy. How can I put comedy and sci-fi or horror together?
Yeah.
And get, you know, maybe some cash.
And some laughs.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the cash part did not work out, man. Like, I don't know what if that was the plan. That was like a really bad plan.
Kind of like Jared's plan in our show. That's true. He has a plan, but it never works.
That's true.
But I will say, sorry to jump in there, but I will say that, like, I was a big fan of, like, shows like this is aging me a little bit, but Paranormal State, you know, like, and
I'm
fascinated by, like, characters like Chip Coffee, you know, and I think one of those, like a medium, and I really believed that he was talking to people, you know, and I was like, this is like, so I personally felt that the idea of, you know, kind of adding the sort of like behind the scenes, like the idea of like seeing who these people really are and actually having our show be a journey of people who start out as full on money seeking skeptics that have to be forced to be believers is sort of was a really kind of interesting thing to tackle. So, you know, I'm not a complete poser. It's just that, you know.
It needs to be proven to you. You're waiting on the proof. For sure. Yeah.
In fact, I wish every day I wish that I could see a ghost so that I know that the curtain will just not close on my existence. You know, I just really, I would be so relieved, be like, and I'd be like, thank God, more.
Finally.
I want to believe.
Yeah.
I want to believe. I just need more proof. My stepfather was a scientist. And so it was always like,
it's just physics, David.
Without giving too much away, because when this podcast goes up, I don't think the Alter audience will have seen every episode. But was there something that you didn't get to incorporate in the show, a specific cryptid or entity or occurrence supernaturally that you didn't touch on?
Well, because we believe in everything, there is really a million things we could have touched on. But there were, I think when I, like, I feel like with the 8 episodes we did, we kind of touched on the ones that really inspired us the most.
Yeah.
And some of them being traditional and some of them not being traditional. I mean, we can say that, you know, there's a leprechaun involved.
Yeah.
True. See, that leprechaun one, though, I will say that David and I had major debate because he felt that the idea was very stupid. But I was more in love with the idea, less because when you started saying that, when we really discussed about everything being possible, I was like, well, why are we limiting ourselves? So David was the first person who brought up, like, well, then if we're talking about paranormal, can we also do aliens? We started having these like different thoughts, or like, can we cross everything?
Part of the same,
like, everything is everything, right? So then the leprechaun thing, but I was really obsessed with, with the viral video that we featured in the show. And I really, really wanted to incorporate that sort of aspect. See, I like to go a little bit off, right? Like, this is where, for me, I'm like, when I'm presented with a challenge of something being stupid, I want to show you actually that can work. But in the future, I think I'd love to like explore a lot more of, honestly, like besides just the kind of North American culture. Like, I would love to do like indigenous North American culture. If that's not appropriation, to be honest, but I think at the end of the day, it's like, it would be really nice to, you know, incorporate some of the little known sort of entities, because, you know, everyone's kind of used to seeing like vampire, werewolf, zombie.
I'm over them.
Yeah, you know, and even so, when we tried to incorporate them, we tried to incorporate them in a way that we hadn't seen yet, you know, so we tried to do that a little bit. We hope we get to do more so that we can, you know, we kind of try to set ourselves up so that we wouldn't run out of plot lines. That was the whole thing. Like, everything means everything.
Well, I'm curious to know, how did the ensemble for this come together? Because it's a great mix of comedic performers that are all kind of on a different wavelength. You know, no one's operating, no one's competing with each other in terms of energy, which is a really hard balance to get, I find, with ensembles, especially in comedy. How did this group come together for the show?
we're all friends, so that really helped. I mean, being up in Canada, you have two really strong hubs for the film and television industry, Vancouver and Toronto. And I was living in Vancouver at the time. And these were like our pals, right? And the thing is, I think part of the reason why we even talked about doing a kind of a paranormal show is that if you look at all of our resumes, you know, they shoot a lot of paranormal, like supernatural, all the sci-fi kind of like movies, all those monster movies, they shoot a lot of those out in Van. So it's like, we were all kind of versed in those worlds. But then in terms of talking to the ensemble, so we were first of all writing for our friends and people that we thought would be good for particular tropes and that sort of thing. But also, you know, like David's like an improv monster. Like he's really, really talented. And a lot of us have like improv backgrounds. So the thing is that even though it was a scripted show, we also know a lot about like sharing the moment. Like you don't need right. to everyone to do that. Like in even we kind of structured the episodes a lot of times. So like this character is the focus of this episode. This is their episode. This is whatever. So we really knew how to step back because at the end of the day, also being Canadian actors, a lot of the times you have to always act the lead anyhow because you're never get to be that person. Right. So we had a lot of that too. But yeah, it was really, really, we were really fortunate to be able to just put the people we wanted into the roles, you know. Dave, you can talk a little bit more.
You know, Michelle, you know, was a key creative, but she was also the director, and she had a very strong hand in managing and balancing, you know, when a certain character slash actor was to be showcased and supporting that. And then also, you know, the cast was great. You know, my wife plays one of the characters and Julia Benson, my wife, Christina Ciccoli, and Julia Benson plays my love interest in the show. Everyone had like, we had a nice set in the sense of like, what are your ideas?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to bring? And everyone brought great ideas and great suggestions and knew when to step forward and knew when to be like, hey, this isn't my time. So it was really great.
And Michelle's got a really good way of also being like, when you try something that doesn't work, she's like, and yeah, we're not going to try that though. That's cool. You know, it's, you know, you're not really that mad. Yeah. You know,
right. Okay. Or we got that take, so we're good on that. Now do it a different way.
Yeah, do it the way it was written and the way I want you to do it.
Right, right. What about just favorite episodes from this 8-episode series? Are there any standout episodes or moments? There's a lot of physical gags. There's a lot. There's good character beats. There's good monster stuff too. And as horror fans, you know, that resonates with me. But what about for you? What were some of your favorite moments from these 8 episodes?
Well, I'll jump in here. I probably resisted it at the first, but the Yeti episode, the bromance, the Sasquatch, I actually, you know, because it was a diversion from what we were doing, and it also kind of sets up some great things we could do in multiple seasons where it's like we can just follow one character predominantly and visit their paranormal experience on their own. So that's episode four?
Four.
Yes.
Well, we have collected a few voicemails from Alter listeners that I thought we could play here on the show. They're people that have had real paranormal experiences. And wow. Hopefully, as I play them, we can all hear and then weigh in. I'm going to try to just play them directly from my phone so we don't have to mess with too many technical things shifting. All right, is everybody ready for the first one?
Yes.
Hi, so I'm calling up not for a solution so much, but I would like to know what side of the debate that you guys would sit on for this story. So I used to live in London, where there's lots and lots of very, very old houses, and also the Blitz happened. So there's all sorts of weird things going on there. And I had what I thought was a very friendly presence that lived in my house, but my friends hated it. So I would like to know if you would be on my side or theirs. Some stories that they did, most of them were very benign. It was like, we'd close all the curtains, we'd wake up, all the curtains would be open, doors opening, taps, all that sort of stuff. But the one that really freaked my friends out that they were not very pleased with was that every so often I would wake up and it would feel like I was being hugged, but there was no one in bed with me. It was just the ghost. And I didn't really see a massive issue with it because they, you know, it was, it felt very loving, not mean or malicious in any way. But my friends all hated it and made me move. So I want to know what you think about that. Thank you.
Wow.
So if I heard this correctly, I'm not sure if I speak English though, or that version of English, is that she had woke up every morning to a ghost hugging her.
Yes, that there
bothered
was
her friends, but not her. All right, yeah. David, I take this first one, and the next one's gonna be on you. Okay, and I take this first one. I think that the way that the Paranormal Solutions team would have to approach this is that we would have to counsel her through how to sort of like come out to her friends for this relationship that she's going to continue with this ghost. And it really is, it's about getting it's really not her problem. Sounds like she's having a wonderful life and that this ghost is quite loving. And then I think the issue is that we would need to really convince her friends to accept this interdimensional love affair. And but then again, the twist would be that maybe we find out that the ghost is hugging everyone. And so then it has to be, then it becomes like a bit of like a breakup, right? Kind of like a more of a heartfelt episode.
Entitled My Ghost Boyfriend.
Yeah, my yeah. ghost. But again, we don't need to even gender that ghost. That's part of it too, where it's like that ghost could really just be its own entity. And maybe that's one of the things that this person needs to come to grips with, is that they're like deity sexual, you know, yeah. or like, you know, that sort of, this is where I would go. See, this is why David says my ideas are stupid.
No, we are a great balance. We are a great balance. I thought, my first thought was like, you know, the episode would be really short. It would be like, oh, you're getting a hug from a ghost. What's wrong with that?
And then roll credits.
Exactly.
Right. I tend to I don't have an issue with a ghost that just opens curtains and closes curtains or cabinet doors and all
right.
that. But I think once it got to the unexpected hugs, I'd need that ghost to go. I'd need that ghost to.
You don't like random unwarranted hugs?
I don't think I would. I have a problem. I have nightmares at night where I wake up screaming. I think if I also felt something that wasn't there holding me.
What if the ghost like closed and opened a cupboard three times, which signified I'm going to hug you any minute
if
now.
If I could deduce some kind of ghost, what do they call it? Morse code? That I knew a hug was coming, I'd be more receptive to it. Yes.
Yeah, this sounds like a deep like consent episode. I'm really,
yeah.
You could use it to unpack that. Yeah.
Also though, because now she said she didn't mind. So that's fine. But part of me is also like, it is kind of like the audacity of it. Maybe that's what the friends are trying to talk to you about. Is that the friends are saying, you know, this relationship goes only one way. You can't hug back, right? You know, this ghost is really demanding a lot of you.
Totally.
Wow.
I think this is a relationship, and then of course it brings out Jared and Sarah's divorce. Oh yeah, this is very deep. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, person in England.
So let's listen to one more voicemail. This one's a bit longer, but let's see what this person has to say.
Hello, my name is Shannon, and I'm going to talk about my possible paranormal experience that I had. I was staying in a house. I was on a set that I was the production designer for. And basically, I was manning everything, staying overnight. And it was a house that was built in the 20s in Texas. And I'm not easily spooked. I was super down to do it, totally fine. I was just going to stay up pretty much all night and dress the house. And around 4 a.m., I was talking to a friend on the phone, and I noticed that there were a lot of cockroaches around the house. It was really strange. It felt like there was none there. And then all of a sudden there was, gave me kind of this weird feeling. I had no idea where they were coming from. And I kind of searched the house and see if any windows or whatnot were open. And I finally went upstairs, and one of the bedrooms, all of the walls are pretty much covered in windows, and it's three walls. And they were windows that you push open that have latches on them. And all of the windows were open. And I, who had been in that room, I was there like a couple hours before then, just making sure everything was set for the shoot the next day. And definitely didn't open any windows. Immediately, I started freaking out, and I locked myself in a bathroom. And in the bathroom, there were, this bathroom I had not gone into yet, there were Barbies that were, like, in the boxes but pinned to the walls. And I immediately was like, wow, cool. So a serial killer lives here. This is great. Definitely not going to survive this one. And how did I get myself into this? I have no idea. And I called my friend back, who I was talking to, and asked him to come over. And he woke up and went on his bike and biked many, many miles to come and make sure everything was fine. And we looked at everything. You know, he looked in all the closets, and nothing was, you know, suspicious. Nothing seemed to, you know, there was no foul play. And, yeah, I am very convinced that there was some strange energy for sure or force in that house that night. I have no idea. I can't explain it. But yeah, that's my paranormal story. If you have any explanation, let me know.
Initial thoughts.
Wait, did anything paranormal happen?
Only if you assume that something paranormal had pushed open the windows and that maybe something...
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that. Okay, yeah.
Well, and right. Then there were also dolls, but that feels a little more like, yeah, serial killer.
Like a cult, like...
Or a
like
cult.
Like serial killer, like cult. But I mean, that's paranormal, right? You know, the cults, like calling people up. But that definitely... I don't care how much the job's paying. If right. I saw Barbies pinned to a wall... I am out of there. There's like, there's no, that is no, like what's really paranormal about this is that yeah, the gumption to stay.
Yeah.
David.
Well, again, I'm so sorry, but first of all, locking yourself in a bathroom, you always have to have an escape route.
That's true.
Lock yourself in one location. Like, what are you going to crawl out? The air fan, the vent? You're done. Okay. So on that alone, I'm like, I'm a little bit shocked. And plus, if she'd never been in the bathroom, what type of like movie was it? Like, was that part of the set deck to have Barbie dolls pinned to the wall?
Right.
And then in terms of cockroaches, listen, there's lots of phenomenon to that show that like insects do kind of weird things and they come out in the millions all the time. Locusts, you name it, it happens. Caterpillars, they all do it. Snakes even. So... I don't know if it was necessarily that paranormal. Now the windows, okay, I don't really have an explanation for the windows unless it was freshly painted and she didn't know that someone opened up all the windows to dry paint and air it out. So
that's true.
All right. It sounds very, very logical, David. I have an alternate theory. Okay. It's not necessarily paranormal. It's human based, but there was somebody there to murder her. And that person opened the windows, left bait for cockroaches to freak her out, to get her into the bathroom. But then she spoiled the whole fun for this killer because her friend had to bike several miles.
Although in a horror movie, if you called a friend and you were like, get here now, I'm freaked out. And they're like, I'll be there in 2.5 hours.
Hours.
They get on their bike. You'd be like, well, they're dead.
Yeah. Clearly it was an indie production.
Yes.
If their friend could only afford a bicycle to get there.
No, they're in Austin. They're in Austin, Texas. They're, they're like green
people.
They
preferred the bicycle, right. He had a perfectly fine working car, but then he got on the bike.
That's right. He's like, wait a second. Hold on a second. How fresh do the Barbies look? Like, were the Barbies pinned there? The windows are open? I think you have a couple hours to survive. I'll do what's best for the environment. I'll ride the bike. Like, yep. You're not in imminent danger yet. You know, have you heard anybody? You know, have you seen anything like that?
1 to 10, considering the impact of gasoline and a combustion engine on, are you like 6 out of 10 scared? Or are you 9?
You see, is the real horror what we're doing to the planet? Is that is that what's really the thing that we're doing here? So listen, if you're still alive, I'll get there on the bike. But that is a horrible experience. Like these are things that, if she really thinks that those are unexplained, like I need, this is the thing, is that you would need to do the follow-ups, right? You would need to follow, like, yeah. Did you call the police? Did you check the newspapers? Did someone escape? Like that's very, or like, does someone really not like you and really wants to just like destroy your
mess with you?
Maybe the producer is upset with your budget for your production budget, your costs, your material costs. You're like, you said, oh, I'll do it for 20K, but you end up billing for 40. And they're like, all right, I'm going to freak this person out.
Wait till she sees these Barbies.
Actually, you know how, what year was this? I'm sorry. I just did a really quick Google search. In 2018, the Barbie killer. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. I was so invested.
That would have been amazing.
I couldn't keep it.
Well, Nick and David, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast. And I can't wait for people to watch Paranormal Solutions, Inc. It's a great series as a horror fan and a comedy fan. So thank you so much for making it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. You were so very kind to us, the both of you. Thank you very, very much.
Before we sign off, here's what's coming up on Alter. On February 12th, episodes 3 and 4 of Paranormal Solutions, Inc., armed with their new slogan, "We Believe in Everything," 6 hapless but passionate, semi-successful ghost hunters attempt to grow their business and become real players in the supernatural game. Then, on February 15th, "I Who Have No One." After years of wanting to look like those who grace the covers of magazines, Francis ends up making headlines in a different way. And on February 17th, "The Night Bell." A nurse's new job at a morgue disintegrates into a nightmare as the female corpses come to life. That's all for this week's episode of Alter Weekly. Until next time, stay altered.
You can catch new episodes of Alter Weekly every Thursday. Get it wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to subscribe and download. Alter Weekly is produced by Andrew Bowser, with theme music by Sapphire Sandalo. Alter Weekly is executive produced by Stephen Michael and Lauren Palmer at Gunpowder and Sky.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.